He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now, Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
I'm Chael Sonnen. You, of course, are listening to Your Welcome. Your day is about to get better. You are about to gain knowledge and insight. You just have to do one thing. Follow me blindly. Do not ask too many questions. Do not point out when I contradict myself. Do as I say. Now, look, we got a killer show today. I mean, today's show is just going to be great. We've got Mickey Rourke, famous actor. Yes, Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man, goes on, does a number of things. My personal favorite was Iron Man 3. I really loved his participation in that. But Mickey's also been a very longtime friend. He's a huge fight supporter. When I was on the set of The Ultimate Fighter, he came out there. He helped us all out. And he even showed us different techniques. The jab was his big move, and he had a number of setups to it. And we think about a jab, think about making a fist and throwing it in a forward direction. Mickey Rourke had 20 different setups to the jab. He's in a room full of awesome fighters, and he had every one of them on the edge of his seat. He used to train under Freddie Roach. He's got every trick in the book. He knows Hagler, he knows Hearns, he knows Duran, he's good buddies with Calzaghe. He knows a little bit of everything. He will be on this show, and I guarantee you, and this is a hard guess to get, but we've got him. The Iron Sheik, the man, the medalist, the World Wrestling Federation champion, the Iron Sheik will be here later in the show. Hopefully, he's not sober. Nobody likes a quitter, Sheik. So if you're listening to this, open up a cold one, and we will be talking to you in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, I am Chael Sonnen, and we got the Iron Sheik. We've got Mickey Rourke. We will be right back. And for that, you're welcome. All right, guys, I want to talk to you guys about Onnit. O-N-N-I-T. You can find it online. You can go to onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T.com, /Chael. You type in my name of Chael, C-H-A-E-L, you save 10%. It's the only place you're going to find that. You're not going to save 10% anywhere else. You're going to save it right here. They have a product called Warrior Bar. Now, all Warrior Bar is it's buffalo meat. I would compare it to like a jerky, not quite a pepperoni the way that it's shaped. I would compare it more to a jerky, but it's buffalo meat. It's extremely healthy. I can eat an entire bar, and it's only 140 calories. There's no MSG. There's no soy. There's no lactose. There's no nitrates. It's gluten-free. None of that junk. It's a snack. It's a good, healthy snack. You keep these things in your car. You slip one in the glove box. I have them on my counters at home. You can eat it in between meals, and I love it. I learned about this from Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla has these things laying around his office. If you ever go to Adam Carolla's studio, he's got these things. He's eating these things left and right. I thought, I'm going to give one of those a try. It was delicious, and I loved it. All Onnit supplements are cutting edge for sports nutrition. I want to share them with you. I want you guys to go out and try this. That's why I'm giving my audience a chance to save 10% off of these products. If you go to onnit.com /Chael, that's onnit.com /Chael. It's that simple. It's all you have to do. Put your order in, / my name like I told you, start strengthening your mind and body, and save 10%. And for that, you're welcome.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back with Your Welcome. As promised, the man himself, Mickey Rourke, is on the line. Mickey, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing? Just got off a plane, just got to New York City, just, you know, same kind of weather you got there in Portland.
You know, I just traded you places. I was in Connecticut, Bristol, Connecticut, about 2.5 hour car ride from where you are, and it was freezing. Mickey, I was so cold out there. What's it like in New York today? You guys got snow?
It's no, it's raining, but it's a lot warmer than Russia.
Oh, is that where you just came in from?
I was in Moscow, yeah. Went over there and got back last night.
Now, I know you went over there and you fought. Were you over there for work, for a movie as well?
No, just for the fight. You know, we trained for the last 3 months for.
I watched that fight. Let's just start with the production of the show, man. That was top shelf right there. That was one of the better produced boxing shows I've ever seen.
Well, they take their boxing real serious over there, and Ruslan Provodnikov in his weight class, probably, you know, right up there with Pacquiao, is, you know, one of the best in his weight division in the world, you know. So it was the first time he fought in Moscow, actually.
Was he the headliner?
He was the headliner, and then Igor, I can't pronounce his last name, there's a light heavyweight named Igor, who was a gold medal, you know, their last gold medalist at light heavyweight. So okay. it was a good card.
And I think I speak for most people. I only tuned in to watch you, and I know that's almost rude that I don't know who the main event was. But for me, you were the main event. For me, it wasn't the guy that fought last. I was tuning in to see Mickey Rourke's comeback.
Yeah, well, I wish it didn't take me 18 years, you know. I mean, I didn't plan on ever fighting again, and the only reason I did is I've written this rugby film, and I just couldn't get beyond a certain challenge with, you know, just for me to look in the mirror, you know, to have a six-pack and, you know, look all studly, you know, just didn't do it for me. I needed to go to another level with my training. I was just bored going to the gym, pumping iron, you know?
You know, I'm actually encouraged to hear you say that, because, Mickey, my career just ended, but I feel that same way, you know, and I feel, and I feel for the same reasons you just said. When I go look in the mirror, I'm not as happy as what I used to see when I'd look and I was an athlete and I was training.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing I see with a lot of guys that, you know, I'm real close with, you know, Boom Boom Mancini and Joe Calzaghe. It's like, you know, these guys, they got to find another substitute to fill their day because, you know, fighting, you know, we get up, you know, these days, you know, a lot of the top boxers have taken a page from you guys that do the cage fighting. And, you know, we train differently now. We just don't run 4 miles in the morning and then go to the gym for 30 minutes. You know, everybody's doing, you know, the cross training and the sprints. And so it's changed. You guys have kind of set the pace and it's changed up a lot. So it fills your whole day when you've got to. I mean, even though I do boxing, I was working out one day with Jay Ellenberg, and I'm looking at the stand-up freestyle wrestling he was doing, and I'm thinking, wow, if I can get myself strong enough to, you know, to move with, you know, somebody like Jake and learn some inside grappling, and it's going to help my inside fighting game, you know, on the inside, and that's real important because, you know, when you come back as an older fighter, you need every advantage you can get, and working out with an MMA guy or a Greco-Roman or a Sambo guy, it really helped my endurance.
Yeah, you know, you told me that. You sent me a text message, said you were doing some 4-minute round Greco-Roman style training, and I knew what you meant. When you said you were trying to strengthen your upper body, I knew what you meant. And you, not only are you strengthening your upper body, not only are you learning that inside fighting, which happens in boxing constantly. You know, the ref steps in and breaks it, but he doesn't do it right away. Right. He lets you guys stand in there and try to figure it out on your own.
The Greco-Roman guy was showing me what I was doing is I was using my shoulder too far back, and he showed me how to pull the man close to me and then raise my shoulder up and give him a jolt under the chin. So it was the technique that you guys do that I thought I was doing it wrong, you know, so it took me to work out with some guy that was 20 pounds lighter than me who was throwing me all around like an eggplant, you know. It was like, wow, look at this. This dude's strong on the inside, and I'm, you know, 25 pounds heavier than him, and I learned a lot from it, and it built up my endurance doing 4-minute rounds with a 30-second break, you know, just doing stand-up.
And, you know, it was a mutual friend of ours, a guy named Randy Couture, that coined the phrase and made it famous, dirty boxing. And what he's talking about is in boxing, when you end up in that clinch and that ref does give you a considerable amount of time, 5 seconds, sometimes 10 seconds. Man, you guys are still fighting, and that's what a lot of people don't see. They think you're grabbing Durant, and resting.
I was once a sparring partner for Duran, and Roberto showed me a little thing one time when just before the ref comes to break you up, he would take one of his hands and just where his knuckles were, and he would just, as the ref separate you, you could just touch the guy under the solar plexus, with a little backhanded knuckle tap and, take the wind out of somebody.
You know, the greatest age of boxing for me, and a lot of it had to do with just how old I was, because my dad was into it. So it turned into this father-son thing. But you bring up Hands of Stone himself, Roberto Duran. You got Duran, Leonard, Hagler, Hearns.
Hearns, yeah.
That was the four-way dance back then.
It really
match those guys up any way you want. And Duran came out on the short end of that, but my father insisted that if you sent those four guys into an alley, you forget the rules, you forget the referees. My dad insists. I watched him drink a few beers and get in heated arguments that Roberto Duran's the guy that's walking out of that alley if it's a street fight. Is my dad right?
I would say in a street fight, I think he's pretty close to right. I mean, I worked with, Tommy and with Roberto, and I got to admit, Tommy, I never seen a left jab like Tommy Hearns on anybody. I mean, Tommy could hit you from 5 feet away and you'd take your head off with a jab.
You know what
he had what was called the shotgun jab. He'd throw it down from his hip. And I mean, one of the greatest fighters of all time was Leonard. And I mean, for a lot of rounds, he outboxed Leonard, with that jab, And, I got hit with it, and I think I got a concussion 9 hours later.
I remember when I was getting ready to fight John Jones, you got a hold of me and you said, listen, you got to watch Tommy Hearns. And what you were talking about was not only that jab, but I remember what impressed you the most was the way he would set it up. When he would do those flinches and fakes, and he'd make you go.
Exactly. Well, what Tommy did was he would use his head and his shoulders, and so his hands were all. He wouldn't throw his hands forward when he fainted, so he always had. He was always set. He always knew he was real good with distance with people because people would come in on him. People had to come in on him because of his reach, So Tommy would throw. He'd use his upper body, and he'd do single and double and triple feints using his shoulder and his head, but yet his hands were still ready to go, ready to fire.
What is Hearns doing now? I never hear from him. He didn't pass away, correct? He's still with us.
No. He's up in Detroit. He's kind of a homeboy. Stays back, where he came from.
And did he make enough to retire? I know he made enough. Did he spend enough that he still got it to retire?
I think he made enough, and he had a pretty good head on his shoulders. So I hope he's doing good. I know Roberto been through some hard times, and it's tough when you give 20 years to something and you have a set regimen every day and you're kind of lost outside the ring.
You don't hear from those guys a lot, though. And there's certainly people that want to. Sugar Ray Leonard, who was the winner of the pack, you talk about that four-way dance. It was Leonard. But you still hear from him. He went on something with Sylvester Stallone. It was a boxing reality show called The Contender. Sugar Ray's still doing an endorsement here and there. He made it in that Christian Bale, Mark Wahlberg movie. I don't ever hear of those other guys, and as I understand
some of them fade, end up on hard times. I mean, another guy who was right in there with that group, who's had his ups and downs, has been Iran Barkley. He's gone through a pretty hard time since he retired. It comes with the game,
And from what I'm told about Hagler, and my coach, my trainer, a guy named Clayton Hires, was part of Hagler's entourage. He was in each of his camps. He sparred with him and ran with him and did all that crazy stuff on a daily basis. But Hagler moved to France. He went and got himself like a farm, of all things.
He's in Italy. Yeah.
In Italy. Okay, and he's a recluse now in terms of media. People still want to talk to him, myself included. I'd love to have him visit with him right on the show.
But he didn't feel good about decision in one of them fights, I think, or something like that.
That's exactly what it was. And he got mad, and it was the Leonard fight. He got mad, and he left. But when guys leave, Mickey, that's a publicity stunt. When we leave, we don't mean it. We're just trying to get attention for it. He actually meant it. This is 20, 30 years ago.
I actually saw him. The only time I saw him was over in Milan about 15 years ago. And he speaks Italian, and, he's the whole nine yards.
I imagine did he marry an Italian gal? Is that what took him out there?
I think he did, yeah. I think he likes the life over there, and I don't think he was, he didn't really get the recognition that some of the, maybe like Sugar Ray Leonard got or other people, and, he was fighting out of, he was also fighting out of Boston with the Petronellis, and another, I think, all-time great fighter, was Hagler. He would fight Orthodox, and then he'd switch, or he'd fight Southpaw, and he'd switch to Orthodox, because he was a converted Southpaw, actually.
That's exactly right. Yeah. But, in a story on Hagler, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but he couldn't get his chance. He couldn't get his chance to fight for the title, and he was the man. There was no question that he was the guy, but they wouldn't let him fight Sugar Ray.
He was the man in his day, for certain.
Senator Ted Kennedy, rest his soul, Senator Ted Kennedy called, and a lot of people think this is a rumor. This is a well-known story, but it's not a rumor. This is a fact. Senator Ted Kennedy called Bob Arum, boxing promoter, and said, "If Marvin Hagler doesn't get a title shot, I will hold a congressional hearing." Bob Arum hung up the phone and sent over the fax to.
That's funny.
It probably wasn't even a fax machine back then, but that's what happened, and that's how serious it was. But that's also how much he was clearly being held back. They just weren't giving him a shot.
Yeah, well, you can't blame anybody who'd want to fight Marvin Hagler.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're the champion of boxing, you get a pick a little bit. Dana White doesn't put up with that. Dana White decides. But in boxing, you can do some maneuvering, and you can do it for a number of years.
Yeah, you can. You can pick and choose, up until about 20 fights, and then you it's out of your hands, kind of.
You got to get so many people to agree, though. It's so many different governing bodies, and people don't understand that in boxing. Like, here's an example that's given a lot of times. We all know that Muhammad Ali was the world champion, but could you tell us which one? Could you tell us when he fought in the Thrilla in Manila?
Yeah, because you got the
what organization it was.
WBO, so it's.
Sure.
I think you got three or four different divisions, and that's what. Hagler ones, it was unified, the middleweights.
Uh-huh. And that's
with Sugar Ray.
And, we don't deal with that in MMA. There is no unify. Right. If we were going to unify a title in MMA, what we would have to do is have a cross-divisional weight class. So for example, John Jones versus Cain Velasquez. That's how we'd unify the belt. But it would still be the UFC belt. And boxing doesn't work that way.
No, boxing sort of beats to its own drum ever since the bare knuckle days,
Now, when you bring up Joe Calzaghe, I would love to get some insight on him. And let me tell you where I'm at with him. I'm a huge boxing fan. I'm almost a historian of boxing. I followed it and know so much. I knew nothing about Joe Calzaghe, including his name, until he was 36 years old, came to the States, and fought and beat Roy Jones Jr., and he beat Roy at his own game. He out-showboated him. He out-speeded him. He out-combinationed him. And it was right towards the end of Joe's career. Why did I not know his name, Mickey? Was he not fighting in the States? Was I not paying attention?
No, I think, they have a really good boxing program over, professional European circuit, and he was comfortable fighting, over in the UK, pretty much. And he won the titles over there, and then I think some people from the States came over that he beat over there, and I think he had two out of the three belts, and then he came over and fought Roy Jones and Bernard Hopkins.
Now, can you make money in those other places in MMA? You're not going to have a big fight if we've got a pay-per-view structure over here. We've got the promotion monsters over here for combat sports.
Well, you can over there if you're a Ricky Hatton or Joe Calzaghe. You'll have a really big following, like, you know, Hatton had out of Manchester, you know, or Calzaghe had out of Wales.
But take a Klitschko, for example. If Klitschko walked down the street in Oregon right now, where I live, I know who he is. I'd want to run over and say hello and welcome him to town. But I don't think a lot of people would. They just don't know who he is.
Well, that's the reason for that is because he's fighting in an era where there aren't a lot of great heavyweight fighters. There's no Oscar Bonavena. There's no Jimmy Ellis. There's no Floyd Patterson. There's no Joe Frazier. There's no George Foreman around, you know. So, you know, if you're fighting a bunch of garbage cans, people don't really give a shit.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. You know, I caught a pay-per-view that he was on. It was in Germany. And it was absolutely packed. He's huge in parts of Europe. I would imagine Russia. But boxing is a big, big thing
in Germany. Listen, he's a well. You know, I know a little bit about him. He's a really well trained athlete, and him and his brother both get in unbelievable shape. Their cardio, you know, they do all the latest stuff that you guys do. They're doing the swimming, they're doing the sprints, they're doing the cross training. It's just that he's fighting at a time where the heavyweight division is not what it was when Frazier and all those other guys were around.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And Lennox Lewis is now talking about coming back to fight Klitschko. I don't think there's any legs to that, and I don't think it sells the way that Lennox Lewis would think that it sells. I think Lennox is a little too close to the trees to see the forest on that his time is gone.
Everybody wants one. You can't blame Lennox because every fighter wants one more fight.
Yeah, that's true.
You know that yourself.
That's true. Absolutely. Absolutely right. And yourself.
Fighter, and, you know, an old trainer once said to me, the only guy that doesn't know when his last night is the guy who's you. You know, who's standing there.
Yeah. No, there's truth to that. You know, they say a fighter's going to fight as long as somebody's going to give him a fight. And I know Klitschko's talked about stepping away a number of times. And one of them, I always call him the little one. I think they're twins. The Klitschko's are twins. Is that correct?
Not really, but they look a lot alike.
They look a lot alike.
The older brother and the younger brother, yeah.
Okay, well, the younger brother just fought. He fought 2 weeks ago. I think he went to a decision, but he whipped him.
Poland, yeah.
Yeah, he whipped the guy. So Calzaghe, he is done, though.
Joe's done. I mean, yeah, Joe talks about, you know, wanting to come back. You know, I mean, I'm friends with Joe, you know. Joe and I talk, you know, and I talked with Stevie Collins, and Stevie talks about wanting to come back too, you know, and I don't think Stevie's fought for over 15 years, and he's still, you know, I was talking to him after my fight in Russia and this, that, and the other, and these guys all want to come have one more fight, you know.
Sure. And, you know,
I never thought I was going to have one more fight, you know. I'm surprised even talking about it to you right now, you know.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I knew you wanted to, and you didn't quite come as far as to say, I'm going to actually go do it. But every time I talk fighting with, even now, even as I'm hearing the passion in your voice and the love of the sport right now, I know somewhere inside you want to. Most guys don't do it, but I can tell you still want. Where are you at? I saw your last fight. Is that a multi-fight deal? Are you going back in there?
Well, you know, I took this fight for a number of other reasons. Like I said, I was working on a project that I've been writing, and I couldn't get myself in a physical level. I had no passion to just look in the mirror and lift weights and have a six packs and put my picture on Instagram, you know, like some bitch. I wanted to test myself and see if I could do it. And when I got in there about 4 months ago and couldn't finish one round, I thought, oh, forget this shit. And then I went back to the gym the next day, and then I said to myself, okay, I'm going to give myself 3 months. And I said to Marvin, Freddie Roach's assistant, I said, would you train me for a couple months and let me know? And he says, I'll let you know in 6 weeks if you can fight again. And so I trained my ass off 3 times a day I think it was about the 8th week. He said, you could fight again if you want. I said, okay, let's do it. So we set a date, and we did it. And I was on the phone. I was thinking, I got to change my game up. I got to, if I'm going to fight, I'm an older fighter now. I got to fight smarter. I can't, you know, I'm okay. What can I do to better myself? And I was always a headhunter. And I got on the phone, and I had an injury to my right arm. I think you know about 4 years ago, I lost my tendon, and that was my big punch. So I was watching Mickey Ward fight, and I kept watching him. The more I kept watching Mickey Ward fight, and when he was fighting Gaddy or whoever the hell he was fighting, I would watch that left hook he threw to the liver. And I said, you know what? Since my right arm isn't what it used to be, let me learn. But years ago in the street in Miami, I think in the middle of the night after one of my fights, Razor Ruddock showed me a punch he used to throw called the smash. It was a hybrid kind of a hook uppercut, and it came at like a three-quarter angle, and it comes nice off the jab. So make a long story short, I was on the phone, I think, up into 45 minutes before my fight talking to Mickey Ward about the placement of the punch. And it worked. It worked out.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, there's some people that watched that fight and thought that your opponent went down and gave up. And there's some truth to that. That's the point of fighting, is try to get your opponent to give up. But the people that thought...
Well, unless you've been hit in the liver, you know, and then, then you know that, like, you cannot... I've been hit in the liver by a guy who was a... three weight classes under me, and I was embarrassed about it because for a minute and a half, I couldn't breathe.
Oh, you can't breathe. Oh, and it doesn't get better that much quick. I mean, it's almost, for me, the one time I've ever had it happen, and I like my liver flipped upside down. I mean, oh my gosh, it hurts so bad. But for the people that thought that, for the naysayers that said, oh, that couldn't have been real, I have two opinions, Mickey. First off, you've never been hit in the liver by a professional fighter like Mickey Rourke. And second off, had you been fighting Mickey Rourke, the same thing would have happened to you, only a lot quicker.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the what I get out of it is I got a great phone call from Boom Boom Mancini, from Steve Collins, from Mickey Ward. I don't give a fuck what the haters say or what the people that never strapped on a pair of gloves ever say. I don't really give a shit what they say. I know that this was the first fight of all my amateur fights and my 9 professional fights. This is the first fight that I ever sat in the dressing room and wasn't nervous. And I'll tell you why I wasn't nervous. I wasn't nervous because I trained my ass off. And I can't think of any other. I can think of all the other fights I had. And as soon as Freddie would be wrapping my hands or whoever I was working with, Bill Slayton, whoever, and I'd hear that door would open, I'd hear that crowd, and I would be going, oh, fuck. This is the first time I fought ever in my life where I didn't sweat all night, you know, the night before or 8 days before the fight, because I know that I trained harder than whoever I was going to fight.
Yeah, and you know,
I think you can understand that.
The saying that cardio is confidence, that's a real thing. Yeah. When you know you're in shape,
you're not sweating it. No. Exactly.
And I've had nights like that, too, where I'd be warming up in the back, and I think to myself, I don't know the outcome. I don't know what's going to happen here, but I know I'm about to have a very, very good performance.
Well, you know what? I was working out with Owen Berger, and I said, you know what? I don't care if I get knocked out or he gets – or whatever happens. I just don't want to gas out.
Right.
And, you know, when I'd be, you know, training with Jake, or I'd be, you know, working with Roman, this sambo guy, you know, and we're going 4 minutes, you know, and I'm doing a sport, the wrestling, that, you know, I'm not really good at, but you know what, your endurance picks up, your confidence picks up when, you know, you just get, you know, training, and you're just getting that 30 second rest, and you're doing 4 minutes, and so, you know, I know I did, you know, I go to UCLA, I do my wind sprints at, you know, 11 o'clock at night. So I know how goddamn hard I train, and you know, ain't nobody can take that away from me.
Well, I'm good friends with Jake Ellenberger, too, and he said the same thing. He goes, man, I don't know how Mickey's going to do. He's been out of there a while. He's fighting a younger guy. So I don't know how he's going to do. He said, but I can tell you this, he is ready. He did put his time in twice a day every day. He said he's ready.
You bet your ass I did, yeah.
Oh, 3 times. All right. Well, Jake only knew about 2, but three times is it's
well,
incredible.
Well, Jay would say you got to take a day off, because I did reach burnout. You know, I mean, I walk around at 190, and I had to make 75, and we fought at a catch weight at 79, And, you know, just for me to hit 79 was, you know, fantastic.
Sure. Yeah, and I'll tell you this, though.
I had to ask Jake, you know, I never used to have trouble shaking weight, but I pumped iron for, you know, 15 years, and I've got more muscle than I used to. So, you know, I'd end up in the sauna on the bicycle, you know, 10 days before the fight, you know, 4 days in a row for 45 minutes, you know, getting the weight off. We were very meticulous. It was the first fight I ever had a fitness trainer, Jordan Ferramusco, who works with Jay Glazer there. Mm-hmm. And I had the fitness trainer, you know, putting with the Bulgarian backpack on me and running up the hill. And,
hate that thing.
You know, and every day would be, let's go another 10 yards. Let's go another 10 yards. And the other thing I noticed, too, is that I was having trouble breathing through my nose because I got a lot of scar tissue. So I went to the doctor. He gave me these plugs to put in my nose to open the nostrils. And we also noticed in training that I was breathing better if I didn't sit down in between rounds. So we didn't sit down in between rounds.
And let me be a little bit critical here. You tell me if I'm wrong, but Mickey, I swear you hit that guy when his knee was already down. You set him down with a body shot, and you look like...
This ain't no dance. It's a fight.
I want to give him one
moment,
more.
You know? Huh?
You look like I want to give him one more shot. I saw you throw that shot, and it landed in the same place as the first one. And I've been hit there. If you've never been hit there, you don't understand how I had... And I saw you hit that guy again. He's never getting up. I remember thinking that.
I give half the credit to my winner more to the advice and Mickey Ward being so kind to me, listening to me rambling about, well, Mickey, because here's the thing, Mickey would throw his, if you watch any of Ward's fights, he would throw that left hook, he'd throw it off a jab, or what he would do is he would turn southpaw and hit you with a 1-2-1 and then slide over to the left. So there was two different ways of setting that liver shot up, you see. And I could thank Mickey for that, you know. I called him right after the fight. I was talking to him 45 minutes before the fight.
Yeah, no, it was cool, man. And I thought there was other stuff. I mean, I was happy for the ending because I'm sitting there cheering for you. But I'm watching it going, you know, he's switching his footwork. He's going orthodox. He's going southpaw. He's faking constantly. Your opponent had a hard time getting anything off because, I mean, if anything you had in that fight, it was head move. You were moving your whole body, changing elevation, coming back up, switched to southpaw, switched to orthodox, defended your body on the ropes. And then, you know, when you finally, and he had you on the ropes, and he was a little patient.
One of my guy who I used to be really close with was Jerry Quarry. And I used to, if you watch any of Jerry's old fights, because Jerry wasn't the tallest of the lot when he fought a lot of the big heavyweights back in the day. Jerry was a counterpuncher off the rope. So, you know, I like counterpunching. You know, I like somebody to throw their shit, and then you can just set back and, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for being a counterpuncher.
Well, there is. And you know, the oldest one in the book, or the best one in the book, is the rope-a-dope. It's what Muhammad Ali did. He did the same position you did. And I watched you lure him in. I watched you even give a facial expression that was almost challenging, and he walked right into it. You went back to the ropes.
You put your hands right in guard position, and he came in. I think there's a lot to be said about, using your defense and then bringing your offense on.
For sure.
Especially if you're an older fighter and you don't want to fight 3 minutes of a 3 minute round. You know, Ali was the greatest at it. You know, and even Bernard Hopkins right now, who has persevered to age of 48 or whatever. Bernard is very cagey. You know, he'll do stuff on the inside, or he'll cover up, or he'll hold on a little bit, and then he'll rattle off some offense. You know.
Now, right when your fight was done, I sent you a text message. I said, man, that was fun to watch. Great job. But you wrote me back something that was interesting, and you just said, yeah, I think the next one's going to be harder, which means I'm going to have to train harder. So let's go back to that. I asked you earlier, but I didn't fully get your answer. So you are going back. You're doing this again. Is that committed to, or did I misunderstand the text?
Well, you know what? It's like this. when you reach a certain age, it's very hard to get a license. So if I get an offer to fight, let's put it this way, if I get an offer to fight in Monaco, if I get another offer to fight in Russia or, let's say, Laredo, Texas, there's a good chance I might take, you know, a couple more.
Yeah. Well, good.
If I don't, then I won't, you know. People feel hard-pressed to give you a license, I failed my neurological 18 years ago, you know. I think sure. I'd be fighting again now.
No, I hear you. And some people don't understand that language. I do. Mickey, what you're talking about there is, and there's an actual rule, and I fight a lot in Nevada. And even if I don't fight in Nevada, right. Nevada is the capital of fighting for America. So whatever Nevada does, everybody else carries on. But they had a little thing in the fine print that I didn't know about, and that exceeded age is 35 years old, which is a cutoff. Looking up to guys like Randy Couture, Bernard Hopkins, right. Dan Henderson, right. Matt Lynn. I'm looking at these guys. They all fought. They didn't even turn it on until they were 35, 36, 37. Gonzaga, who you bring up earlier. And I had to go through that same thing. And it made me feel weird is what it made me feel. I'm going, guys, here's the litmus test for fighting. If I tell you I can do it, I can do it. Because not going to lie. The guy doesn't want in there.
If you have four different physicals, you know, then, you know, if you want to fight, then you should be able to fight.
Yeah, right? I had a coach named Mark Schultz, first jiu-jitsu coach I ever had, and he could whip everybody in the gym. Now, this guy had a background. He's an Olympic champion wrestler. He was a bona fide badass, but the highest belt that he ever got to was a brown. They just wouldn't promote him. So when he would go to enter competitions, he'd enter in the black belt division. He finally got himself a black belt, and when I saw him walk in the room with it, I congratulated him. He then told me that he went to a place called Meyer and Frank and bought it himself because he was sick of nobody promoting him. So he's the one guy that has a black belt under himself. And he deserves it, Mick. He's a badass.
That's fantastic. You know, it's funny you bring that up because I was in Los Angeles and I was just hanging out one time and this dude introduced me to another guy and I thought, oh, God, I was watching that guy fight the other night. And actually, there's a MMA guy that I was working out with for this fight named John Lewis.
Sure.
You know, and I mean, he was great with his hands and he helped me quite a bit, too.
Yeah, John Lewis was a great trainer, too, and he was into that for a while. I'm not positive what he's doing now. I know he's, like, promoting clubs and doing some other stuff in Vegas, but, he is one of the original guys. In fact, Chuck Liddell, Dana White, Tito Ortiz, Randy Couture, they all trained under him, and I was on the coattails of the guys like Randy Couture. I was in the gym. He owned the gym, but he always brought John Lewis in, and John would stay there for a week.
I saw him. I actually met him by accident the night after I just saw him for the first time fight. He was, because he was like before you guys. You know, it was before the MMA got real popular.
Now, Mick, you had brought up a rugby movie. And the last time that I saw you in person, which was about a year ago, this was a thought in your head. You didn't have the cameras rolling. The cast and crew and location weren't set yet. Where are we at with that? I heard you say it again. Is that filmed, filmed?
It's a film I wrote called Irish Thunder, and it's about a rugby player. And I've written 17 drafts since I talked to you about it last. Having a lot of trouble because of the subject matter, you know, doing a sports movie that revolves around a certain delicate lifestyle.
Right. Now, I know what that is because you told me, but I'm not saying it because I didn't know if that was privileged information. Is that something we can discuss? Can we discuss the subject matter? Should we just leave it at that for the audience?
It revolves around a physical sport, a very macho sport, let's say like boxing or MMA, which is rugby. And it's just, I was just over talking to two investors over when I was in Russia, and because the topic is quite taboo there, you know, I wasn't able to get any financing out of let's say, people that were interested in working with me on a film, but they said, yeah, we'd like to do a movie with you, but not that movie.
Sure.
So, you know, it's and the reason I wanted to do the film is because it's not about a tennis player or a golf player or what have you. It's about, you know, it's like all the noise when that kid came out last year, or whatever, in the NFL draft, and said he was gay. You know, it's still a sketchy subject.
I hear you, but that's changing. And I was also going to bring up the football player, and now it's come out in basketball, and we had it in MMA, Ronda Rousey's first opponent. The world is changing on that, and it's changing not only to the, okay, hey, we don't care anymore. It's turning into, no, we do care, and we want to see it, and we want to support it. I think you may be a little early, but you're right on the cusp. I was just saying, Mickey, you're right on the cusp, though, I realize that you're going to be met with some resistance, but that's changing quickly. Now, I didn't know that because, see, it's different cultures. In America, we started changing about 2004, 2005 politically. That's when these initiatives began to come up. But here we are 10 years later. I can tell you for myself, even as a person, I've changed with it too. I don't look at things the way that I used to look at it. And my suspicion is, we are the leader. So when you bring up Russia or you bring up these other parts of the world, yeah, man, they're still stuck where we were stuck decade and a half ago.
Well, look, 30 years ago, one of the greatest middleweights ever was gay. It was Emil Griffith, you know, and you know they didn't ever even brought that up, you know.
Yeah, I didn't know that till you just said it.
Yeah, there's a documentary on him now. They're talking about it. He was talking about it, about how he got jumped coming outside of a gay club. You know, four guys beat the shit out of him. But it was very hard for one guy to beat the shit out of him in the ring, you know. And he was, you know, I think a 3 or 4-time world champion. But it was, you know, back in the day, you just couldn't bring that up.
Yeah. Well, and you know what's helped change, Mickey? You know what's helped change a lot of public opinion and impression is Hollywood. It is what we see on TV and the way it gets depicted in movies. I really hope this movie goes. And if anything, if nothing less, you're going to be part of that. You're going to be part of helping change people's perspectives. I hope that the movie gets off the ground.
I hope it gets off the ground, too. that I won't have to go fight anymore. I just, you know... You get bored waiting for the right job to come around, or the right what anything to come around, you know, and you just want to do something with your life.
Sure. Now,
you know, when I said to Marvin, you know, Marvin said, "Are you sure you want to fight again?" I said, "Yeah, Marvin." I said, "I'm tired of sitting home waiting for the right script to drop on my lap." You know, I mean, that ain't living; that's dying. You know, I mean, at least I feel alive. When I'd have to, you know, train 3 times a day and just be so goddamn sore and question it, my back would go out, or this would, or I'd break this, or you know, the second day sparring, my nose that I got fixed 5 times. I went, oh, there goes the nose, you know. There's something about the challenge of your body changing inside and you feeling stronger and you feeling like, yeah, I can, you know what, I can do 50 more push-ups today, or I can run 15 more yards or meters further than I did yesterday. There's a really good feeling that way.
For sure. It's immediate gratification. You know, when you have that sense of accomplishment, when you go to bed sore and tired and depressed because you know you got to get up and do it all again the next day, there is a bit of a high that comes from that. There's a high because you see the result of your hard work now, right now.
Well, you would know that, but the people that want to question, let's say, getting hit in the body, they wouldn't have a fucking idea what that's about.
Sure.
You know, when you can run another 15 meters that next day or do 50 more push-ups the following week than you did the week before, you go, you know what, I am doing my work. And there's a real good feeling about that, and there's a confidence that, you know, you said, I can go in there and I can go the distance. I'm not going to gas out, you know. And I'd watch Ellen Berger, who's 20-some pounds lighter than me, flip me around like, you know, a little girl. I'm going, shit, man, you know, I got to get stronger. I got to get harder. I got to get faster. And you do. If you put the work in, you're going to turn that corner.
Yeah, you know, I had fought a guy. You want to talk about body shots? I fought a guy named Shogun Hua, and I finished him with a guillotine choke, and I got a lot of credit for that. And a lot of people looked at that and go, well, you know, I don't know if that choke was really there. Well, let me tell you what. The choke was kind of there, but the fight ended about 15 seconds earlier. I hit him in the body. And I'm not great with body shots, but in a ground and pound situation, when I'm on top of the guy, I am. It's hard to miss. The body's just sitting there.
Right.
I hit him in the body, and he made a gasp and a sound. I remember when my fist hit his body, he wasn't ready for it. He wasn't flexed. My fist went into his body and the skin and the flesh. It was actually a really gross feeling as I hit it, but I knew right then this fight's over.
It's funny because you saying this reminds me of when Mike Tyson fought. I don't know who it was he fought, but he fought somebody, and he said as soon as he hit the guy in the body, he heard the guy go, whoa, and he goes, the fight's over.
Yeah. No, and I knew it was. As soon as I hit him in the body, I knew this fight is over. And most people missed it because you set a body shot real quick. Body shot doesn't look like much, but boy, it feels like something. Not just
lots of times, too, you know, if you're hitting the liver, you're not going to feel it right that second. You're going to feel it about maybe 3 seconds later.
Mm-hmm. And kidney works the same way.
You can't get that deep breath.
Kidney works the same way. You know, one of the great boxers ever, and particularly in my era, in my lifetime, a guy named Oscar De La Hoya. Nobody is going to question Oscar De La Hoya for anything, whether it's his competitive spirit, his heart, his work ethic, his talent, his success. Nobody questions Oscar De La Hoya. Oscar De La Hoya went down and never got up versus Bernard Hopkins to the exact same shot that you put the guy down with in Russia. It was the same shot.
Listen, one of the toughest guys that ever lived was Arturo Gatti. And if I'm talking again about Mickey Ward. If you watch when, you know, Gatti's pounding the shit out of Ward here and there in this fight, this round and that round and this round and that round. And then Mickey finally, you know, because Mickey would go to the stomach, then go around to the liver or vice versa. But, you know, when he did finally catch Arturo with that body shot, I mean, you saw Arturo just froze him, you know. It was over, you know, and you're just paralyzed.
Yeah. Now, you bring up Arturo Gatti, rest his soul, one of the greats ever. I completely agree. New Jersey kid. He got killed. He got killed.
Murdered, yeah.
He got, thank you. He got murdered by his wife, but she walked. They called it. At first they smelled a rat and said, no, we got a murder in our hands. And then all of a sudden, nope, free to go, clear her passport. She gets to fly back home, and it all goes away. Am I a conspiracy theorist, or did she clearly whack that guy?
I mean, that's what I'm hearing, you know. I mean, I was talking to Mickey and everybody at the funeral, you know, and it was just, different country, you know, and just that and the other.
Yeah, yeah. And I should choose my words carefully, because if she didn't do it, but God, I'd hate for her to lose her husband and then lose her credibility too. But man, the stories that came out were fugazi, and you didn't have to be Inspector Gadget to put this thing together, man. She killed him. And that's what they thought at first too.
I don't think you put on a pair of gloves and fight the way he fought and hang yourself.
No, I think that's right. I think that's right. I think that was just a really cool deal. Now, screw a deal. Now, the wild card boxing gym, Freddie Roach, I know that you had a hand in getting that going. Tell me just a little about that.
Not really. What happened was when I wanted to turn pro, my trainer, rest in peace, Bill Slayton, we were like father and son, and he said, Mickey, I just don't want to see it. And I said, well, Bill, come on, man, you know, and so he said, well, listen, let me recommend somebody to train you if you want to turn pro. And I said, who? He said, there's a guy named Freddie Roach. He said, I think he's out in Las Vegas. And I called Freddie up. He was parking cars out there. Freddie, who was a really good fighter, tough fighter in his day, actually fought for the world title 3 times himself. And he actually beat Bobby Chacon, but he was fighting about Chacon's hometown. So, I mean, Freddie should have been a world champion as a fighter. And now what happened was he come out to from Las Vegas, and I opened a boxing gym in my in Los Angeles called Outlaw Boxing Gym, and kept it open for the 6 years that I was fighting pro. And then when I had to stop fighting, Freddie opened up the Wild Card Gym. So basically, Freddie just opened his own gym, but he was already in Los Angeles. So
oh, okay.
He just moved the gym. He moved the gym down the street several blocks.
All right. Well, very cool. Hey, Mickey, we're out of time. Look at this. The time flew by. Is there anything you want to plug or you want to? I got a whole list of things I wanted to cover with you. I just didn't realize that we just burned through 45 minutes. So unless there's anything you want to get out there, I'll let you get on with your beautiful day.
No, I'm good, man. You know, I'm good. I'm good with it all. I just feel very blessed that I had an opportunity to be surrounded by some really great guys that helped me. You know, even you know guys that are in your world, in the MMA world. Uriah Faber came down, and you know he gave me some advice on losing weight, and Ellenberger, and you know. Justin Ferramusco in LA, and I was really fortunate that Freddie's protege, Marvin, little kid from the Philippines, Marvin. So, you know, believed in me and said, yeah, after 6 weeks you can fight. And I had, you know, real good support team around me. You know, and I wouldn't have been able to make it through it without, you know, the advice of like that Uriah gave me, that Ellenberger helped me out with, and things worked out okay.
Yeah, man. Well, I'll tell you what, it's a fraternity, Mickey, and you're part of the club. In fact, you started the club before we were ever here. So, yeah. I mean, I can speak for myself and all the MMA guys, all the boxing guys out there, man. When you're in, you're in, and it's a lot easier to get in than it is to get out. So. Yeah. If myself or anybody else can ever do anything to help you, I guarantee it's a phone call away.
All right, God bless you, my man.
Hey, you're awesome. Thank you so much, Mickey.
All right,
guys, I am Chael Sonnen. That was Mickey Rourke. What a fun guest to talk to. What a fun guest. There's so much stuff we didn't have time to get into. I mean, the guy's a movie star is what he is. But before that, he was doing boxing. So we had enough time to cover some boxing, including the current fight that he had. And I didn't have any time to get into Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man. And then it picked up from there. We'll have to get Mickey on another time. For now, we're throwing a commercial. You guys stick around. More You're Welcome coming up. When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com. to find out what others paid for the car that you want, then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.
What do Rich Eisen and Snooki have in common? Well, how about they were both just selected as Best New Podcasts of 2014 by the editorial board of iTunes? Oh yeah, and you'll also find them and another 200 amazing shows at PodcastOne.com. While we're at it, let's not forget to congratulate Adam Carolla as he continues his winning streak by being one of the most downloaded shows ever on iTunes.
That's correct, congratulations!
So if you want to find the best and most downloaded podcasts, there's only one place to go, PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com. Now, back to Your Welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
I'm Chael Sonnen. You're back to Your Welcome. As promised, the living legend himself. I've got the Iron Sheik on the phone. Sheik, you with me?
Mr. Chen Sun, of course I'm with you. But I can't believe it. The legend, the champion, have to wait for you. How long do you call me back? Anyway, I'm here and I'm happy to talk to you like last time. You are the best doctor. You are the best fighter in the alter US UFC. And I'm happy to talk to you, Chen Sun. Yes, sir.
And Sheik, I apologize, buddy. I kept bumping your time slot, but let me defend myself a little bit. When they told me that the Sheik will come on, they gave me a huge time frame. They said, yeah, the Sheik's going to call you between 11 and 12:30. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. What kind of a time slot is that? Because I'm in a rented studio. I don't own this studio. I got to be out of here. So I didn't know when you were calling. I was trying to adjust, and I just, in my own head, decided, you know, I bet he's going to call later rather than earlier, and then sure enough, you call first thing in the morning. You know what, Sheik? I wanted to give you some time because I wanted you to have a beer or two before you called in.
Oh, thank you, Chel. Thank you, Sarah. But I understand because Oregon time is different than Georgia time. That way, I respect you, and I'm happy to leave to call me now. I wish I see you, and then future, I'm going to have a good day. Cold day with you. Yes, sir.
All right, buddy, I tell you what. I got two things that I really want to cover, so I'm just going to get them out of the way now because, like I said, I'm in a rented studio. They might kick me out of here, so I want to get these two things out. First off, the Sheik, not only your name, buddy, but it's also the name of a movie that you've got out. It's on iTunes. It's on VOD. Tell me a little bit about the Sheik.
Well, Jill, I'll be honest with you. That movie, people that calling me every day from all over the coast to coast and distance. It's a top three movie in the world, and I'm very happy to, because Megan Boyce, that twin brothers, Jean Pajon, and the producer, Jake and Mike, and they did an excellent job, and true story about Arvi Sheik, and people love it, and I'm very happy to pretty soon going to be, people see it all over the country, and I'm happy to, you know, that movie is good, and thank you to respect that people, that movie, and I'm very happy they did a great job.
Oh, I know it's going to be great, and people can go check it out on iTunes. Again, it's called The Sheik, but here's something that's interesting, all right? You left Iran, and you came here, and correct me if I'm wrong, you came here to live the American dream. However, when you got here, you became the most hated man in America because you went into pro wrestling. You began to play a part. You played it better than anybody. Was it worth it when you got here and thought, but wait a minute, now I have to have everybody hate me? Was it worth it to have come to the U.S.?
Well, Chen, you are intelligent, all-American man. You know wrestling and UFC fighting, and it's the toughest sport in the Olympic, and AAU, All-America. And I come to America, greatest wrestling country, a professional amateur from Dan Gable to them. Oregon, Richard Saunders, and Owen, the... to beat the Dan Gable, and I grew up with the toughest sport you know better than anybody, wrestling, professional, amateur, AAU, Greco-Roman, freestyle, and that way is Iran is a very, very popular number one sport is in Iran, oldest country in the world, is a Greco-Roman and freestyle, and I was grew up with that sport from Iran to I come to the American Minnesota, Mr. Alan Rice, and Dan Gable, Danny Hodge, and Lauren, created my team 5 years, AAU champion. Anyway, so I made it to the Megan Boys know about the Iron Sheik to make that movie from Iron Sheik, and people are really happy. Everybody called me, tell me about my documentary and movie. And I mean, you know, I paid for my due because you know better than anybody. Wrestling is the toughest sport in the world. And I grew up with that toughest sport. You know better than anybody about that sport. But also I had a good people behind me like Megan Boyce and producer, director to the, make that movie about me. And I'm very happy to the people see it and then they can see I pay for my due. And I'm happy to you call me today. I don't want to talk about myself too much. Let the people talk about my movie and myself. But I'm happy to you call me, Charles.
Well, buddy, I'm happy to have you here. Now, let me transition to something else. CM Punk, former WWE. See, it's always the WWF to me, Sheik. I was around when you were around. That's when I was watching. It was WWF. But I got to WWE champion, CM Punk, he just signed with the Ultimate Fighting Championships. What do you think of that? And is he in over his head?
What a good question, Charles, because you know Hulk Hogan, Iron Sheik, we were old-timers. I was a champion. Mr. Bob Backlund was a champion. Hulk Hogan was a champion. We all left, but it's still WWE company, number one company in the world, is there. But as far as I know, I saw it, and CM Punk had a great run in that WWE. And WWE make him to the biggest star, and with the best manager he had, Mr. Paul Heyman. And then all of his sons, after a long time, he had the belt to make million dollars in the WWE. And I heard all of his sons, he left. Just like Brock Lesnar, he left the WWE. But now Brock Lesnar come back again to WWE, because WWE going to be their number one company in the world, going to be there, but we come and go. But they are always there. But wish luck to Mr. CM Punk. But as far as I know, he had a great run in the WWE. I hope he can make it to the UFC to have a good run and be a millionaire like he was in the WWE. But also, I don't know the all of the tour, but only thing I know, they told me, my agent's Megan was to tell me CM Punk left. But I really don't know what was his excuse to be a champion with a lot of money he make in the WWE. He left the company, but wish luck to him in the UFC. I don't know nothing more about him.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, you bring up the money, and I don't totally know the numbers that he made in the WWE either, but I can tell you this. Over the course of a year, what he made in the WWE, he'll probably make half that in the UFC, but he'll make it in one night. Now, he's got to train every day. The WWE, you know, all of that counts, but in one night under Dana White, he is likely to make what he made with Vince in about 6 months. Now, I don't think this is a cash grab. I don't think he's after it for the paycheck. I think he's after it for a genuine achievement. I think it's just something he wants to do. Call it a bucket list if you want to, for lack of a better term. I think that's what we're seeing here. I just want to know, you, Sheik, with a true combat background, you were a true wrestler, AAU champion, top wrestler in all of Iran. Do you think a guy with no background, just a tough guy with a passion, can he do it? He's 36 years old.
Absolutely, Charlie, like you said, perfect. Wrestling is a young man sport. It doesn't matter he is a WWE or UFC or Greco-Roman freestyle, is a young man sport. But as far as I know, probably he cannot handle it too much be on the road in the WWE, and serve the family. Maybe it was hard for him. But I hope, I don't know about the UFC money-wise, but also it's not easy to even UFC to be right away champion and be a number one fighter. But I'm waiting to remake it, and good luck to him. But like I said, WWE going to be there. People come and go, but WWE company going to be over forever.
Yep, I think you're right. Sheik, listen, I booked you too late in the day. I want to talk to you longer. I'm out of time. Like I told you, I rented this studio. They're giving me the boot so some other turkey with far less ratings can come in here and do the time. I got to get you back on the other air another time, but I got to say goodbye for now.
Oh, goodbye. Thanks for calling me. And thanks for all my friends to watch the Iron Sheik movie. God bless you. Tell how to have a good day.
You're awesome. See you, buddy. Ah, the Iron Sheik. Ladies and gentlemen, if there's anything you come away with when you talk to the Iron Sheik, it's a genuine disappointment for not having enough time. And what new listeners, people that aren't familiar with the Iron Sheik, that was Sheik in about as good a mood as you're going to catch him in. I think he even slipped a few compliments in there. And that's not generally been his style. If you caught him on the Howard Stern Show or you catch him on YouTube, the Sheik is angry, but he is one of those guys whose anger is not only hilarious and funny, but it's entertaining. You don't want to tune him away. In fact, when I even brought him on, I made a little comment. Sheik, I hope you've had time to have a couple of beers today, because a drunk Iron Sheik, everything I just said about him being funny and entertaining, pushing the envelope, when you add a couple of beers to the mix, it really exemplifies things. But that guy's a lot of fun. And I was a professional wrestling fan way back in my youth. I get credited for being a professional wrestling fan my whole life, but it's really not true. I was really just a fan back when I was a kid, the Hulk Hogan era. When you talk about the Hulk Hogan era, little fun fact, Hulk Hogan won the world championship for the first time in 1985, beating the Iron Sheik. So that's how far back the Sheik goes. The Sheik knows the stories, man. The Sheik knows where the bodies are buried. We've got to get him back on. In fact, he was supposed to be on longer. I have to take the credit for this one. I pushed the time. I didn't realize what time it was. And I just kept rambling. I was having so much fun there with Mickey Rourke that time just slipped away. I didn't even get to ask Mickey all the stuff I wanted to. I think I'm just going to need to run this whole show back, get a redo, bring these guys both on to their own shows, not make them share a spot so that we can get some of the good stuff out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I've had it with you all. I am done. Thank you all for listening. You made a very wise choice. You should be proud of yourselves right now. Right now, today, you have done one thing correctly, and that was listening to this. And for that, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.